It's not as good a Friday song as Bounce Your Boobies, but it'll suffice. How y'all doing? Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thank you very much for tuning in this evening. We do appreciate it. In a few minutes in the program, we are going to tell you for real. It's in the current issue of Rolling Stone. Who assassinated John Kennedy? E. Howard Hunt. We talked about this the other night, mentioned that he knew. And he had made a deathbed confession. He made it to his son. You can take his confession with as many grains of salt as you want to, but it's a lengthy article in Rolling Stone. We'll get right cut right to the chase and name the names. How's that? Boy, didn't the Decider have a busy little week this week, huh? From the fourth anniversary of his murderous illegal invasion. An occupation of Iraq to two separate showdowns with Congress, huh? One over sending Rove and Myers to testify under oath in Attorneygate, and now a second showdown over the Iraq Supplemental War Funding Bill. What's going to be, I don't know, my mind is just kind of expanding and contracting with the thought of the Democrats sending this bill for his signature to fund his murderous war, and he vetoes it. And then tries to blame the Democrats. This is, he is such a jerk. Such a jerk. It's just unbelievable. I guess it's hard work being king of America when your subjects aren't so loyal anymore. And we're not talking, you know, when he talks about the Democrats are trying to micromanage. Micromanage? It seems to me that Bush is the one who's been ignoring his commanders on the ground. Oh, God, micromanage. Okay, well, anyway, the vote was 218 to 212 today, mostly along party lines. I think two House Republicans voted with the Democrats. Nancy Pelosi said the American people have lost faith in the president's conduct of this war. The American people see the reality of the war. The president does not. True. However, the Republican whip, Roy Blunt, who I don't know if that describes his personality or his last name, but he said, quote, the stakes in Iraq are too high and the sacrifices made by our military personnel and their families too great to be content with anything but success. How do these people... Oh, never mind. I ask that all the time. What do these people... What do they use for logic and rational thought? Anyway, it's strange to hear this little tin pot would-be dictator threaten the Congress with a veto over a spending bill he wants to fund his bloody occupation and oil war. Now, how does that work, Raisin Brain? If you don't get your way, then you don't get any money. If you don't get exact, you're going to veto it. That sounds like I have almost three-year-old child. That's toddler logic.
Today, a narrow majority in the House of Representatives abdicated its responsibility by passing a war spending bill that has no chance of becoming law, and brings us no closer to getting our troops the resources they need to do their job.
That's your job.
Purpose of the emergency war spending bill I requested was to provide our troops with vital funding.
No, it wasn't.
Instead, Democrats in the House, in an act of political theater,
like landing on an aircraft carrier,
voted to substitute their judgment for that of our military commanders on the ground in Iraq.
That's a lie, Chucklenuts.
They set an arbitrary date for withdrawal without regard for conditions on the ground.
That's another lie.
As I've made clear for weeks, I will veto it if it comes to my desk.
Okay, then you really have to bring the troops home if you don't have any money to keep using our troops as your personal toy soldiers, you arrogant little twit. political theater? Who has gotten inside of Bush's brain and turned all the switches to off? Political theater? No, George, it's called, what's it called? Well, let me put it this way. According to the Constitution, the United States House of Representatives controls the purse strings. They decide. They really, really do, Georgie. It isn't Dick, and it's not you, and it's not the Senate, and it's not Elliot Abrams or Irving Libby or Dick Cheney. It really is the House of Representatives. So, no, it's not theater. It's called the law. Can you say that? The law. Now, if the spending bill has no chance of becoming law, chuckle nuts, that's where you step in, because in their infinite, well, maybe not so infinite, wisdom, the framers of the Constitution decided to give kind of, sort of, a balance of power thingy. So if a bill passes you don't like, you don't have to sign a signing statement. Twit, you can veto it. Veto means, I say no! And then, if the House of Representatives wants to override your veto, they can. But you know what? It takes a whole big old bunch of them to override your veto. See, that's the way this thing is set up. Twit. So go ahead. Veto it. Leave our soldiers hanging out there. Now, as far as you're saying that the Democrats are passing a bill that doesn't provide for our troops, what the hell are you talking about? You and Rumsfeld, you're the ones. You have somehow hidden, stolen, wasted billions upon billions of dollars so that our soldiers are continuing to have their heads blown off because they don't have the right equipment for an urban... Oh, God. I take it way too seriously. I know I do. So what's Monkey Boy going to threaten to do next? If Congress doesn't give them money that he wants on his terms, he's gonna hold his breath until he turns blue. He's gonna stop eating his peas. He's gonna pick up his warheads and go home.
The Democrats have sent their message. Now it's time to send their money. This is an important moment of decision for the new leaders in Congress.
You're damn right.
Our men and women in uniform should not have to worry that politicians in Washington will deny them the funds and the flexibility they need to win.
Oh.
These Democrats believe that the longer they can delay funding for our troops, the more likely they are to force me to accept restrictions on our commanders,
uh-huh,
an artificial timetable for withdrawal, and their pet spending projects. This is not going to happen.
That's right. You'll show them. You'll veto the bill you want to fund your war. That'll teach them. How many psychopathic or sociopathic comments are in here? I'm waiting for him to say, give me your lunch money or I'll give you a wedgie. The Democrats have sent their message. Now it's time to send their money. Our men and women in uniform should not have to worry that politicians in Washington will deny them the funds and the flexibility they need to... What the hell does that mean? Are you talking about Walter Reed? Are you talking about being under-equipped to go kill people in an urban setting? What are you talking about, you twit? So it's the Democrats' fault that our soldiers are not winning. No. First of all, it's your fault, twit, for causing this war and occupation against everyone's advice. Even there's a talk show host in Atlanta named Mike Malloy. Even he knew this was insane. Ah, but it's the Democrats' fault. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
that. Get your range on. It's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. I'm having a little trouble with this one. Iran seizes. And I don't know why there's quotes around the word seizes, but that's how CNN's reporting it. 15 British Marines, I guess, I don't know what time today this happened, but the story is 15 British Royal Marines on patrol in the Persian Gulf have been seized by the Iranian Navy. That's according to the British Ministry of Defense. The ministry said in a statement today the following, quote, "The Marines were engaged in routine boarding operations of merchant shipping in Iraqi territorial waters," end quote. This all occurred in the Shat al-Arab waterway that marks the southern stretch of Iraq's border with Iran. And I don't think anybody knows the territorial waters there. But anyway, when the Marines were on board, six Navy ships from the Iranian Revolutionary Guard showed up and claimed the British had really entered Iranian waters. So therefore, they told them to disarm, stand down, and come aboard, or we will kill you all. And discretion being the better part of valor, the British Marines said, "Got it, mate!" They were taken to Iran, and a U.S. military official said they are believed to be unharmed. Why would they be harmed? It is not immediately clear where in Iran they were taken. Let's hope the Iranians do not have something like Abu Ghraib or Guantanamo. God forbid, right? Huh? So that's a very interesting little wrinkle there. I think, if nothing else, it certainly shows that the Iranian Navy... I didn't even know there was one. Iranian military people are not afraid to come up on a British, it looked like a frigate to me. I have no idea. They came up on the Iranian or Iraqi ship in six little rubber speedboat things. I mean, you got to give them credit for that, right? I hope the soldiers are okay. But since everybody's playing chicken in the Persian Gulf right now, as the run-up to a nuclear strike that is just going to end everything, I guess the Iranians have a right to play a little chicky-poo too, right? Our North Metro Atlanta correspondent, Sharon, who is also a military expert, said, "Mike, after re-listening to your Monday night show, I found a small error. You were talking about the Balkans war criminal now employed by the U.S. government as a consultant for the Iraq war. I think you said Monday that Bill Clinton and Wesley Clark bombed Bosnia-Herzegovina. Actually, Wesley Clark and Clinton and NATO bombed Serbia in the Kosovo War in 1999. Slobodan Milosevic was trying to, quote, ethnically cleanse, end quote, the Muslim Albanians from Kosovo. This cleaning included forcing these people from their homes, killing or oppressing them in other ways. Milosevic's actions in Kosovo violated the Dayton Accords. As for Bosnia-Herzegovina, NATO and Clinton did the bombing there in 1995 to stop the ethnic cleansing there. I don't know who was the Supreme Allied Commander of NATO at the time. This war ended with the Dayton Accords. I didn't know until a few months ago that Clark helped negotiate the Dayton Accords. He served as military advisor on Richard Holbrooke's negotiating team. At the time, Clark, who was a three-star general then, was the J5, which is the Director of Strategic Plans and Policy for the Joint Chiefs. All that strife in the Balkans used to run together in my mind because it was just too horrible to sort out. Massacres, mass graves, rape camps. I'm just now sorting it out. I remember in the early 90s wanting to bring back the Cold War, at least when the Soviet Union existed. They, for the most part, suppressed the racial, religious, cultural rivalries that reemerged after the wall fell. Sharon, P.S. At the end of Clark's first week as J5, the bloodbath in Rwanda began. No one at the Pentagon knew anything about Rwanda or cared. Clark wanted to intervene and stop the killing. He even drew up a plan for intervention, but he couldn't get any of the Joint Chiefs or the chairman interested. He still regrets that we stood by and let all those people get hacked to death. Now, suffice it to say, Sharon is an ardent supporter of General Wesley Clark. She would like to see him in the Oval Office, either president or vice president. And I have found Sharon to be absolutely right on when she writes. Thanks, Sharon. Oh, she added a postscript where, you know, the Democrats micromanaging the war? Excuse me? It was those generals, the ones that Bush hasn't fired, and the commanders on the ground who told George Bush not to escalate the war, not to send more soldiers. Sounds like Bush, who knows absolutely nothing about war, is micromanaging things and not taking the advice of his generals. P.S. Have I mentioned lately how much I hate these people?
Why are we all fighting? Why do we keep on lighting these fires, these bombs? We don't know what's gone wrong. Forgetting where we've come from and all of this.
It's about 26 before the hour. Peter in Albuquerque writes, Mike, I love your show and screaming with you. Something's come to me, and all the anger I have towards that rat Bush, sometimes I can't stop thinking about my fellow citizens who voted to put him into office and still blandly sit by and do nothing while so many die and so much is wasted. Cynically, I put a lot of blame at their feet, both for their vote and their inaction. I'm pissed. I hear you. A federal judge has refused to dismiss the terrorism support charges against Jose Padilla. You know, he was the former Chicago street gang member who was charged with trying to assemble a nuclear bomb in Chicago. Never mind. Anyway, he's been in custody for 3.5 years and driven mad. And this federal judge has rejected the claims of his attorneys that his constitutional right to a speedy trial has been violated. U.S. District Judge Marcia Cook agreed with prosecutors, Bush crime family prosecutors, that Padilla's years in isolation in a Navy brig did not count because he had not yet been charged. Son of a bitch! Is this not catch-22? Is this not some hideous... They didn't charge him for 3.5 years, so they won't release him because the 3.5 years don't count because he wasn't charged. Kathy, does that make sense to you? He wasn't charged for 3.5 years, so he can't be released under a constitutional protection of a speedy trial, guarantee of a speedy trial. He can't be released because he wasn't charged. But he wasn't charged because... oh, my God. Another Bush crime family member, J. Stephen Griles, former Deputy Interior Secretary, pled guilty today to obstruction of justice in the Senate committee's investigation. He becomes the highest-ranking Bush crime family member convicted in the Jack Abramoff corruption scandal. He was a former number two official at the Interior Department. His boss, Gail, what's her name? Norton, she should go to jail, too. He admitted in federal court that he lied to the Senate about his relationship with convicted lobbyist Abramoff. He pled guilty to a felony charge. His sentencing will be, I don't know, when will his sentencing be? Oh, June 26th. What do you think he's going to get? So another one goes to prison. The Bush crime family, if the investigators keep going, it will wind up like the Reagan crime family. Do you know that there were something like 350 Reagan appointees who were either indicted and convicted, or indicted and not convicted, or who resigned under the threat of indictment, or who were found not guilty, or who resigned as a plea bargain to get the charges dropped? The single most criminal and corrupt administration truly in our history, by that benchmark, to coin a term, was the Reagan administration. And all these people talk about, yeah, well, I want to govern like Reagan did. Well, okay, I'll just open up a prison someplace and bring them all out and put them in positions in your government. Why don't we remember that, huh? Why don't we remember that? Now, as promised, I don't know, take this with as much caution as you want, but it's in the current issue of Rolling Stone. E. Howard Hunt was on his deathbed, and his son is named Saint. That's his name, or his nickname, or whatever. Saint was a drug dealer. His father... They were both outlaws. Saint was a drug smuggler, drug dealer, and his father, E. Howard Hunt, was a murderer, a destabilizer of governments, a real criminal for the CIA. So, Rolling Stone says, I found this kind of interesting. It's a lengthy article. Anyway, they're in Miami. Saint is by his bed, and disease is eating E. Howard Hunt into oblivion. And he's thinking he's about 6 months away from death. So E. Howard Hunt finally put pen to paper and started writing. Saint had been working toward this moment for a long time, and now it was going to happen. He got his father an A&W diet root beer, then sat down in the old man's wheelchair and waited. E. Howard Hunt scribbled the initials LBJ, standing for Kennedy's ambitious vice president, Lyndon Johnson. Under LBJ, connected by a line, he wrote the name Cord Meyer. Meyer was a CIA agent whose wife had an affair with JFK. Later, she was murdered, a case that's never been solved. Next, E. Howard Hunt connected to Meyer's name the name Bill Harvey, another CIA agent. Also connected to Meyer's name was the name David Morales, yet another CIA man and well-known, particularly vicious, black ops specialist. And then E. Howard Hunt connected to Morales' name with a line, the framed words, French gunman Grassy Knoll. So there it was, according to E. Howard Hunt. LBJ had Kennedy killed. It had long been speculated upon, but now E. Howard Hunt was saying that's the way it was, and that Lee Harvey Oswald wasn't the only shooter in Dallas. There was also, on the grassy knoll, a French gunman, presumably the Corsican mafia assassin Lucien Sarti, who has figured prominently in other assassination theories. Saint, E. Howard's son, says, quote, by the time he handed me the paper, I was in a state of shock. His whole life, to me and everybody else, he'd always professed to not know anything about any of it. But I knew this had to be the truth. If my dad was going to make anything up, he would have made up something about the mafia or Castro or Khrushchev. He didn't like Johnson, but you don't falsely implicate your own country, for Christ's sake. My father is old school, a dyed-in-the-wool patriot, and that's the last thing he would do. End quote. Now, later that week, E. Howard Hunt also gave Saint two sheets of paper that contained a fuller narrative. It starts out with LBJ again connecting him to Cord Meyer and then goes on. Cord Meyer discusses a plot with David Attlee Phillips, who brings in William Harvey and Antonio Veciana. He meets with Oswald in Mexico City. Then Veciana meets with Frank Sturgis in Miami and enlists David Morales in anticipation of killing JFK there. But LBJ changes the itinerary to Dallas, citing personal reasons. David Atlee Phillips, the CIA's Cuban operations chief in Miami at the time of JFK's death, knew E. Howard Hunt from the Guatemala coup days. Veciana is a member of the Cuban exile community. Sturgis, like Saint's father, E. Howard, is supposed to have been one of the three tramps photographed in Dealey Plaza. Sturgis was also one of the Watergate plotters, and he is a man whom E. Howard, under oath, has repeatedly sworn to have not met until Watergate. So, to Saint, the mention of his name was big news. In the next few paragraphs, E. Howard goes on to describe the extent of his own involvement. It revolves around a meeting he claims he attended in 1963 with Morales and Sturgis. It takes place in a Miami hotel. Here's what happens. Morales leaves the room, at which point Sturgis makes reference to a big event and asks E. Howard, "Are you with us?" E. Howard asks Sturgis what he's talking about. Sturgis says, "Killing JFK." E. Howard, incredulous, says to Sturgis, "You seem to have everything you need. Why do you need me?" In the handwritten narrative, Sturgis's response is unclear, though what E. Howard says to Sturgis next isn't. He says he won't, quote, get involved in anything involving Bill Harvey, who is an alcoholic psycho, end quote. After that, the meeting ends. E. Howard Hunt goes back to his, quote, normal life, and, like the rest of the country, is, quote, stunned by JFK's death and realizes how lucky he is not to have had a direct role, end quote. Now, you can find this. You can find it online, rollingstone.com. You don't have to buy the publication. It's all there. And it's rather lengthy. I know what I'm going to be reading this weekend. I guess that's the closest we're going to come to a story. But I think it's a given, isn't it? Come on, everybody that has ever thought about this. I don't care if you were live during the assassination, like a lot of us over a certain age, or if you weren't and just studied it in history. We know. I know. And so do most people know. Beyond a reasonable doubt. In other words, if there was a trial held, and on trial was the a Warren Commission theory or conclusion, we would find that Warren Commission conclusion guilty of lies. We know, beyond a reasonable doubt, that Lee Harvey Oswald did not, on his own, assassinate John Kennedy. We know this. We know this. As surely as we know anything about our lives, those of us over a certain age, we know that. So it's very interesting to see what E. Howard Hunt, according to his son, wrote and said right before he died. If he, in fact, said and wrote it.
The Mike Malloy Show on Nova M Radio. Talk radio matters here.
Yeah, you can tell it's Friday night. The spokesman for Bush's Justice Department says, in effect, everything that Gonzalez says about he knew nothing about it is now inoperative. This is breaking news. It's Friday night. It was almost 10 o'clock, Friday night. There are no newscasts until Sunday of any consequence, right? Oh, the networks do something tomorrow night at 6:30, but pfft, who cares? NBC News is reporting it this way. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez approved plans to fire several U.S. attorneys in a November meeting, according to documents released Friday, that contradicted earlier claims that he was not involved in the dismissals. God, these people are stupid. They really are. The November 27 meeting, in which the Attorney General and at least five top Justice Department officials participated, focused on a five-step plan for carrying out the firings of the prosecutor. Five-step plan? Whoa! Gonzalez signed off on the plan, which was crafted by his chief of staff, Kyle Sampson. Sampson resigned last week, blah, blah, blah. Now, you understand, True Seeker, that Sampson has agreed to testify without a subpoena in front of the Senate Judiciary Committee tomorrow. I'm sorry, not tomorrow, next week. So that's why this story is coming out now. They know that one of the things Sampson's going to be asked is about this particular sequence of events. Goodbye, torture boy! What do you want to... I don't know. I don't bet on political things because it's suicide, but I'll make a calculated, intelligent guess that Gonzo will be gone by Monday. Okay? Now, I'm a week late. I thought he'd be gone last Friday. All right. This is from Tuesday the 13th, which should be Tuesday a week ago. Here's Gonzalez.
I am not aware of every bit of information that passes through the halls of the Department of Justice, nor am I aware of all decisions. As a general matter, some 2 years ago, I was made aware that there was a request from the White House as to the possibility of replacing all the United States attorneys.
Yeah.
That was immediately rejected by me. I felt that that was a bad idea, and it was disruptive. But again, with respect to this whole process, like every CEO, I am ultimately accountable and responsible for what happens within the department. But that is, in essence, what I knew about the process. Was not involved in seeing any memos, was not involved in any discussions about what was going on. That's basically what I knew.
Oh, you lying son of a bitch! Oh, my God! I didn't know anything about it. I wasn't involved in it. Now, listen, here he is trying to create a fall guy like Irving Libby was for Cheney. Listen to this.
Mr. Sampson was charged with directing the process to ascertain who were weak performers, where we could do better in districts around the country. That is a responsibility that he had. It is a response. He worked with respect to U.S. attorneys with and presidential personnel at the White House. So naturally, when questions came up with respect to the evaluation of performances of U.S. attorneys, the charge for the chief of staff here was to drive this process. And the mistake that occurred here was that information that he had was not shared with individuals within the department who was then going to be
shut up!
Testimony and information to the Congress.
Sit down and shut your ass up, torture boy. What is this? You never even saw a memo? You lying son of a bitch! You wrote the memo! A five-step plan memo! Goodbye, torture boy! Now, let's see if we can get Samson up there to say, well, actually, my boss wrote it, but it was dictated by Cheney. What have we been talking about? What have you been talking about? That this little attorney gate thing, this prosecutor gate thing, was going to turn into Watergate? Remember the third-rate burglary that brought down that corrupt, filthy, degenerate Nixon? Well, here you are. Gonzalez okayed the firing. Not only did he okay it, apparently, it was his idea on how to do it. Now, what did he say? I had no knowledge of nothing. I know nothing. I see nothing. I hear nothing. I speak nothing. I'm just George Bush's boy from Texas. We used to love signing death warrants. We would sit there and laugh. I know nothing.
This is certainly going to make it more difficult for that tough talking Texan from Kitty Bungport to deny Congress the right to get Myers and Rove on record in public sworn testimony. It's going to be like, well gee, what, my Tejano was lying? Well, no, you still can't have Carl. You can't have Carl. Yeah.
If you listen carefully, now listen. Listen. That's the sound of cards falling. Like in a house of cards. Listen. Yeah. It kind of reminds me of 1974 for some reason. Damn, I don't know why, but... All right, well, there you have it. Gonzalez okayed everything. His fingerprints and his mouth prints and his teeth marks and his saliva and his sweat are all over everything. Forget DNA to find out who is Anna Nicole's baby's father. Here's enough DNA here to prove that Gonzalez and Cheney and the rest of these bastards chewed everything to pieces and then tried to lay it off on this poor Kyle Sampson. And Sampson's like, oh, no, you don't. No, 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 no. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Oh, that's such good news. Oh.
Now the time has come to part, the time for weeping.
Everybody now.
Vaya con Dios, my darling. Vaya con Dios. My love.
Now the village mission bells are softly ringing. If you listen with your heart, you'll hear them singing.
Vaya con Dios.
Welcome back, about 7 past the hour. Now, another story is breaking, and that is on the Pat Tillman so-called friendly fire death, the ex-NFL football star and Army Ranger. This is just breaking within the past hour. Pentagon investigation will recommend that 9 officers, including up to 4 generals, be cited, held accountable, that means their careers are over, for missteps, I love that word, in the aftermath of the friendly fire death of Army Ranger Pat Tillman in Afghanistan. The Defense Department Inspector General will cite a range of missteps and inappropriate conduct as the military probed the former football star's death, and on and on and on. That's at MSNBC.com if you want to check it out. What is irritating as hell, though, is that as much as his death is a grievous event, for the family and for his comrades in Afghanistan, and it was surely a grievous event, it affects them and them alone, unless you look at the bigger picture that the United States military is full of liars at the command rank. The other story about Gonzalez is the one that should be pushed right now. It's not on the New York Times website yet, which I don't understand.
But the Tillman story, I just keep thinking about how this relates to Bush. You know, Bush is going to have a hell of a time now. I'm going to veto that bill. No, no. You know, playing that card with Congress now that all these generals are about to be fired. We're going to rely on the people on the ground. Yeah, the liars on the ground, yeah. That, you know, that cover up friendly fire incidents. Okay, so you got that strike against him. He's not having a good weekend. And now the Gonzalez lie and how he's going to now claim any kind of moral authority to keep Rove and Myers out of, sworn testimony.
And what is just vicious about this whole thing is the Gonzalez being caught in this lie is the tip of the proverbial iceberg. Every one of these sons of bitches, we've been maintaining this for 4 years. Everything they say is a lie. I have offered challenge after challenge over the past 4 or 5 years for any Republican, anywhere in the United, anywhere on the globe that is listening to this program online, from Sirius, from radio stations, I don't care where, any single Republican, call the program and tell me one single thing that is, put out there for public consumption by the Bush crime family that hasn't been a lie. Now, this is why it was so important to get enough Democrats to the polls to offset the tampering with the voting machines. Subpoena power. None of these, they haven't used their subpoenas yet. But it's used as a threat to get these sons of bitches to show up. Now, aside from that, the fact that with the Democrats in power, they could hold hearings to bring in these fired federal attorneys so they could lay out their story. Can you imagine in the past 6 years how many of these sorts of events, lies and cheating and fraud and destruction to the American system of justice, to our Constitution, to our way of life, has been perpetrated by the Bush crime family, and these filthy, god-awful Republicans just sat there on their asses in the House and the Senate, not caring because they're in on it. How can anybody ever, ever vote for a Republican is beyond me. This generation of Republicans anyway. Oh, yeah. Well, let's go get the brain dead woman and let's pass laws about abortion. And let's tax cuts for the wealthy. But when it comes to doing what is right, this is the party that claims morality. Good God. How could that possibly be?
Oh, and let's not forget my personal favorite, which is basing an entire war of lies on the misinformation from one guy named Curveball.
Yeah, well, I wonder if Curveball actually exists. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez approved plans to fire several U.S. attorneys in a November meeting, according to documents released Friday night that contradict earlier claims that he was not closely involved in the dismissals. The November 27 meeting, in which the Attorney General and at least five top Justice Department officials participated, focused on a five-step plan for carrying out the firings of the prosecutors. There, Gonzalez signed off on the plan, which was crafted by his chief of staff, Kyle Sampson. Sampson relied, blah, blah, blah. The documents indicated that the hour-long morning discussion held in the Attorney General's conference room was the only time Gonzalez met with top aides who decided which prosecutors to fire and how to do it. Justice spokeswoman Tasha Skolinos said it was not immediately clear whether Gonzalez gave his final approval to begin the... Oh, stop! Skolinos also said Gonzalez was not involved in the process of selecting which prosecutors would be asked to resign. Oh, really? Then who made the decision if not the head of the Justice Department? Let me think a minute. I bet his initials are Dick Cheney. You think? And we just played this for you. March 13, and explaining the firings, Gonzalez told reporters he was aware that some of the dismissals were being discussed, but he was not involved in them. I knew my chief of staff was involved in the process of determining who were the weak performers. Where were the districts around the country where we could do better for the people in that district? And that's what I knew. But that is, in essence, what I knew about the process. I was not involved in seeing any memos. I was not involved in any discussions about what was going on. That's basically what I knew as the Attorney General. Holy Jesus! The morality party, huh? Okay, we'll frame the question again like we do all the time. What's it going to take? Huh? The Secretary of Defense? A liar. Attorney General? A liar. Supreme Court nominees, liars. Secretary of the Interior, a liar. Advisors to Cheney, liars. You want me to go on? No. Hell no, it'd take me all night. Every one of these pigs. And the reason Gonzalez was caught so easily, the documents are right there, is because they've had 6 years of knowing that these filthy pukes in the House and the Senate, these Republicans, would do nothing. It was all a joke, a farce, a sham. There's been no government as laid out by the United States Constitution in this country for at least the past 5 years, possibly the past six. They didn't care. With a full majority in both houses, with a judiciary that was packed during the Reagan and Pappy Bush years with and Clinton years with right-wingers? We don't have to answer to anybody. We can do any goddamn thing we want to do. You want a war? Here's a war. You want another war? Here's another war. You want lies, deceit, fraud, theft, murder, mayhem? Here it is. Nobody's going to stop us. Good God. Have you got some music? We need a polka tonight. Have you got, is that within reach? Who stole the Kishka? I just think we all need to get up and dance. Clear up until the break. Anybody want a polka? I don't know. All right, come on, let's get up. Take a deep breath. Come on, we need to dance. Okay. Come on, get up! Hey, 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 ha!
Who stole the Kishka? Who stole the Kishka? Who stole the Kishka? Someone stole the cup. Round and firm and fully packed. It was hanging from the rack. Someone stole the Kishka while I turned my back. Who stole the Kishka? Who stole the Kishka? Who stole the Kishka from the butcher shop?
Hey, hey! Are you dancing? Come on, come on, get out of bed. Get up, come on, dance, dance. Are you driving? Pull over! Pull over!
Or my sweet kielbasa. You can have my pierogi. Bring me back my Kishka. Who stole the Kishka? Who stole the Kishka? Who stole the Kishka from the butcher shop?
Hey!
Yaka found the Kishka. Yaka found the Kishka. Yaka found the Kishka.
Dance, damn it!
He hung on the rack. He found the Kishka. He found the Kishka. He found the Kishka. Hung it on the rack.
Left out? Join your friends at the NSA and Homeland Security and listen to Mike Malloy every single night. They never miss a minute.
Man, that just leaves me out of breath. The polka is—it's not that hard, but you know you gotta keep, you know, bending your knees and hopping around. I remember the first time I learned how to polka. I grew up in a neighborhood of Toledo that was had heavy Polish population, and all Catholics. You know, I was the only non-Catholic in the whole neighborhood. But all the weddings every Saturday, man. We go down to the corner of Division and Junction Avenue, right there near St. Peter and Paul's, no, St. Stephen's Church. Was it St. Stephen's? St. Anthony's. You can go five blocks any direction, Toledo, without crossing the line into another parish. But all the VFW halls and all the halls that were available for rent every Saturday, man, just Polish weddings after Polish weddings. And you could just walk in. You know, it was a great way to get food. You'd walk in. We were just kids, so we'd just walk in and, you know, pretend like we belong there and, you know, ask we were 13, 14 years old. We would find the 13, 14-year-old girls and ask them if they want to dance. And they would, that's how we learned how to do the polka. Well, that's how I learned how to. And I had a friend named Paul Milios who was Greek. He didn't know how to polka either. He lived more in my neighborhood. We used to go to the Polish neighborhood, though, and we would learn how to do the polka. Whew. It was hard then. It's hard now. But it gets your blood going, right? All right. Kenny in New York says, you can always tell when they're about to bow out, they start protecting the kids. That's true. Didn't Gonzalez have some kind of a press conference today, or he's meeting somewhere about kid porn on the internet?
Yeah, well, it's only a group of people that he's actually taller than, so it's a natural backdrop for him to put him out in front of a bunch of kids. But it's like, I got to stick around to protect the kids.
Protect the kids.
For the kids.
Right, right. And Kenny writes, shoot, buddy, that's how I knew he'd go down this weekend. Time to start shining up the next Medal of Freedom. Yeah, can you imagine what they're going to say about Gonzalez now? He was
the finest Secretary of State that I've ever had. I know. What was he? Attorney General. He was a fine... Huh? He wasn't? Oh, I'm sorry, Dick.
Oh, my God. All right. I've been asked to pass something on to you. There is something called the Official Mike Malloy Campfire Chat. The Official Mike Malloy Campfire Chat. For this evening. Is it there every night? I don't know. But it's there tonight. It's at MikeMalloy.com. So go to MikeMalloy.com. Then go to the message board, right? And then go to the section Political Free-for-All. And the Official Mike Malloy Campfire Chat for tonight. So go to MikeMalloy.com. Then go to the message board. And then go to, what's it called, Political Free-for-All? Go to that thread, and then get into the official Mike Malloy Campfire Chat. This is something new? Is this relatively new? One of our steady, terribly addicted listeners, Tim, apparently put this together. So go check it out. I'm just brimming with this news. Four generals are going to be cashiered, and five other officers over the Tillman affair. You know that came right from a Rumsfeld trying to make a hero out of a soldier, Pat Tillman, who was killed in so-called friendly fire. These lying sons of bitches, they will do anything, won't they? Huh? They will lie about everything. The top officers in the military will lie. Justice Department, the Attorney General will lie. The Vice President will lie. Bush lies every time he opens his damn mouth. They all lie. Hey, Republicans. Hey, yo, Republicans. All you Republicans out there in Phoenix, especially, who listen to this program on KPHX, what are you going to do? I mean, come on. A lying? Is that somewhere in the Ten Commandments, too? I mean, Gingrich doesn't care about adultery. These people don't care about stealing. They don't care about coveting someone else's property like Iraq's oil. Is there it? They don't care about killing. Thou shalt not kill. Honor your mother and your father. Do they do that? Come on, Republicans. You're not going to continue to support this group of vermin. Are you?
That dam is gonna break, and it'll wash you away. It'll wash you away. Yeah, one day soon, that dam is gonna break, and it'll wash you away. It'll wash you away from me.
Redefining Anger Management. It's Mike Malloy, only on Nova M Radio.
26 before the hour. Lloyd writes in regarding political theater. That was a term that Bush used. The Democrats are doing political theater. Oh, you twit. Anyway, Lloyd writes, hey, Mike, did you notice how the commander and thief today was threatening to veto the appropriations bill with veterans and family members of troops standing behind him? Now, how is that not political theater? God, I'm sick of these people, Lloyd. Yeah, I know, Lloyd. For most of us who still think, non-Republicans, yeah, Bush standing there saying that, it's just like you just want to just get a hammer and start smashing your television for some reason until there's nothing left. More breaking news. This is from Kim. Excuse me. Kim writes, love you, Mike. Just heard on the news that a crack Iraqi force was on its way to arrest some major bad guys in Iraq, but the mission failed because they ran out of gas. Oh, my God. P.S. I used to live within spitting distance of St. John Hunt, E. Howard's son. He pronounced his name Sinjin. In Scandinavia, Wisconsin, while I was recovering from Vietnam wounds in the 70s. Sinjin and Howard weren't on speaking terms at the time and didn't care to talk about Watergate, so I never learned anything about his father's view. Now, this, and then we're going to do phone calls. It's an email from Walt in Spotswood, New Jersey, who signs off as a Nova M founding member with a parenthetical question, how are we not at 5,000 members yet? I don't know, Walt. Anyway, Walt writes, what is it like? What is it like, Mike, to have pride in your leader and your government's policies? Honestly, I had no idea. I was just wondering if there ever was a time in your life that you had the warm fuzzies for anyone in power. I sure as hell never had. I'm a child of the 80s. I remember the political satire of Ronald Reagan in my Mad magazine and the old HBO show, not necessarily the news, but I will admit to never being politically minded back then. My dad was a blue-collar man who worked a three-shift rotation, what was called a plant. Not many of those left on these shores. My mom was a housewife who stayed at home to raise her only child. Not many of those left either. My dad's overtime pay is what kept us in the middle class. I grew up with the, quote, all politicians are the same, but vote when you get the right to, end quote, mentality. I declared myself an independent, and my first presidential vote was in 1992 for Ross Perot. To me, he was the anti-politician, and he got my anti-vote. In 1996, it was Clinton, and in 2000, Gore. I still had never voted in any other election other than presidential. I couldn't have told you how many members there were in the House or the Senate or when those elections were. It felt better to be ignorant. Then King George changed all that. In early 2004, I became aware of the politics around me. My question about how anyone could listen to political talk radio was replaced by a need to listen to Air America, and now, of course, Nova M, all the time. I became more and more ashamed of our president, what he reflected about us, the citizens of the United States of America, as a people, and voiced the need for a change in leadership as bad as a baby needs to be changed out of a two-day-old diaper. I'm addicted to Maddow, Cedar, Hartman, and you, Malloy. I'm on the blogs, reading political-minded books, including the history of the great men and women who shaped our nation. I support those I believe in, and I've voted in every election since 2004, including for the little Board of Education in my town. You guys are making a difference, and I want to, too. As I was watching the TV show The West Wing the other day, I got that feeling, you know, the one where your heart smiles at the actions of someone in power doing something good, stunningly good, and making a difference. At that moment, I thought, what would it be like if this wasn't a TV show? What if our president's policies warmed the heart? What if they made you feel proud to be led by them, to be revered the world over, to be an American? So, what's it like, Mike? Do you know? Because I have no idea. Walt in Spotswood, New Jersey. Well, kinda, Walt. I'm a child of the 50s. So, I remember, kinda, sorta, not really, but I remember being alive when Eisenhower was president. But I came to my consciousness when Kennedy was elected and when he was sworn into office in January 1961. And the reason that got my attention was because of the uniqueness of his presidency. He was a Catholic, and such a thing couldn't happen in America. So it kind of got my attention. And to the extent that I was able to, I paid attention to what he was doing. It took me years to realize that Kennedy was not the impetus behind the Bay of Pigs, that Kennedy, in fact, probably would have left Cuba alone, probably would have opened up relations with Cuba, just if for no other reason, to make sure that that country did not fall into the sphere of Soviet influence.
To me, Kennedy represented what you're talking about. What's it like, you ask, to have pride in your leader and your government policies? Now, I wasn't aware of government policies way back then, but I would see this guy on television with the weird up east accent, weird to me from the Midwest. Good looking man, good looking family, who seemed to have a sense of humor, seemed to know what he was talking about, and he seemed so damn young. Even though I was, you know, half his age, he seemed so young. I was used to presidents being old men. When Kennedy was murdered, it was probably the scariest day of my life. If not the scariest, the second scariest. Maybe the scariest was when the Soviet naval vessels were steaming toward Cuba and we were threatening, Kennedy was threatening to nuke the Soviet Union. That was the implied threat. That was a scary day, too. That's when I bought my first gun, as weird as it sounds, a handgun. I don't know what I was going to do with it, but probably shoot a missile down. But, you know, desperate times, et cetera, et cetera. I felt good about Kennedy after he was murdered. So that's the best answer. I mean, good about what he tried to do when I started to get an historical perspective. And I know it was all spun. I know there was no such thing as Camelot. I know that Bobby Kennedy, as his brother's attorney general, went after Martin Luther King. But your question is not, you're not asking me a fact-based question. You're asking me an emotional question. What's it like to have pride in your leader and your government's policies? I didn't know about the government's policies. I didn't know what was going on behind the scenes. I do remember when Kennedy sent the troops to make sure that African-American students could get into school. I do remember that. Of course, Eisenhower did that. But it was weird times. The 50s didn't end until 1963, November 22nd. That ended the 50s. And the 50s were a very weird time. If you weren't there, it's hard to describe. A lot of people said, well, regarding the 60s, if you remember it, you really weren't there. Well, the 50s is just the opposite. If you were there, you don't remember it because seemed like there was nothing happening. And in fact, there was all sorts of intrigue. We were overthrowing governments in Iran and Guatemala. We were making sure that we were ready to move into Indochina when the French were defeated at Dien Bien Phu in Vietnam. There was all sorts of intrigue. But your question is, when did I have pride in my leader? And I would say it was probably during the Kennedy years. And I didn't have pride in him, so to speak, until after he was shot and murdered. And then the mythology began. About and I don't use that term in a derogatory way, the mythology, but the mythologizing of Kennedy by whomever, by Jacqueline Kennedy or whomever, by Sorensen or the people that wrote about him, it doesn't matter. The story was there. And I felt when Bobby then started to run in 68, I thought I could probably feel pride in him, even though I was still, believe it or not, not aware about his dirty tricks against Martin Luther King Jr. When they were both murdered in the same year, that was it for me. That ended it. So since that time, I don't think I've ever trusted any. Oh, that's a sweeping statement. I was going to say any politician. There have been a couple I've trusted, but they have been kept out of power, whether it was a senator or a representative or even president. So as far as presidents are concerned, though, no. Even Jimmy Carter, I felt that he was too prone to being manipulated. So there's your answer. That's the long answer. I do remember a time when I felt good about the leadership of my country, but it was only, as ironic as it sounds, it was only after that leader had been murdered, in retrospect, in other words. So, well, that was an awfully long answer, wasn't it, Kathy? I'm sorry. I just... Okay, is it time to take another break? It is. All right, we're going to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to do phone calls for the rest of the program tonight. So stick around if you want to get it said. Bring it on, to quote the twit, God, I hate him, in the White House.
whatever you want to talk about, it might be cool to keep it on sort of keep it on the topics that have been fluttering around like bats this week. I just can't wait for Monday. I'm all excited now about Monday because of this Friday night revelation of Gonzalez. I wouldn't be surprised if the little rat bastard resigns over the weekend. Wouldn't that be fun? Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is NOVAM Radio.
Just one key unlocks them both. It's there at your command. Come on, people now. Smile on your brother. Everybody get together. Try to love one another right now.
Let's pretend we're just two people and you're not better than me. I'd like to ask you some questions if we can speak honestly. What do you feel when you see all the homeless on the street? Who do you pray for at night before you go to sleep? What do you feel when you look in the mirror? Are you proud? How do you sleep while the rest of us cry? How do you dream when a mother has no chance to say goodbye?
Yeah.
And tell me why.
By request, Pink, Dear Mr. President. Co-written, by the way, with the Indigo Girls, I believe. Right, Kathy? Yeah. All right, to your phone calls at about 8.5 minutes before the hour, starting with Bob in Seattle. Hey, Bob.
Mike Malloy, just your average biochemist turned radio talk show host, huh?
Yeah, that's it.
Should I be addressing you as Dr. Malloy?
If you like. whatever makes you, whatever eases the way.
I called you about a month ago about a neighbor of mine here, you know, that was 100% service connected, that
yes.
had the brain trauma on the flight deck of an aircraft carrier.
Yes.
That they cut his benefits because when he had a review, they asked him if he drank and he said, yeah.
Uh-huh.
And he's got people fighting in his behalf now and seceding in his behalf. But there's something else I wanted to tell you that night, but we were pressed for time about the VA. Most people are not aware. There was an ABC primetime special 3 years ago about this time of the year. And they interviewed the Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs down in your neck of the woods there in Atlanta. And he wouldn't face the camera. You know, they only had the camera on the back of his chair, and you just saw his head and silhouette and his voice.
Uh-huh.
Now, there's an executive order that FDR signed in 1939. Most people are not aware of, or they never would have raised their hand and taken the oath as I did in 1963.
Mm-hmm.
When I went in the Navy, if they knew this. He signed an order, man, that has never been reversed by any other sitting president. You know, they could easily just write another order, you know, that would supersede the executive order he wrote then. But it's never been done. Okay?
Right,
the
right.
order says the VA has complete immunity from civil and criminal litigation.
Huh.
And people all the time talk about, I'll get a lawyer, I'll fight him and all. Can't be done. They're dreaming.
Yeah.
They're dreamers.
Yeah, yeah.
It sounds too horrific. I told a lot of guys over the years, over the last 3 years, and it sounds so horrific, they reject it. You know, they don't want to hear it.
I know.
I told this to a guy 2 years ago back in New York when we were waiting at the pharmacy for our prescriptions in the waiting room. Mm-hmm. I wound up rolling on the floor with the guy. He got that bad. He didn't want to believe me.
Rolling on the
floor. By the way, I was on top of the guy most of the time. I was on top of him most of the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I got the best of him. Well, he misjudged me for the white hair. You know, he was about maybe 20, 25 years my junior. And he misjudged me. I'm not your average 61-year-old right now either, or 59-year-old either at that time.
Yeah. So, now, this was a fight, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Because it was so, well, it was so horrific. The guy didn't want to believe me when we got talking about.
Well, that's a good thing. That's a good thing, Bob.
He ordered at Roosevelt time, 1939. The sound is so horrific. The guy didn't want to believe it. He says,
I just punch him out.
The VA would never treat anybody like that. The government is blah, blah, blah. You know, he was like a cheerleader for the VA. He couldn't believe they would do something like that. You know?
So what'd you do? You gave him another service-connected disability, right?
Yeah.
Well, if you get beat up by a veteran, that would be a service-connected disability, right?
Yeah. The security broke us up.
Yeah.
That was funny, but I told so many guys.
Wait, back up. Security in a drugstore?
No, at the VA hospital.
Oh, at the VA. Oh, you were getting your drugs at the VA hospital.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were in a drugstore.
You know, in New York, yeah.
No kidding, New York.
But if you could get a transcript.
Yeah.
Going back to about this time from ABC Primetime in 2004, or even a tape of it, you would see what I mean. About, this has been that dirty little secret they tried to bury over the years.
Yeah, well,
since 1939, about the total immunity they have.
Sure. But
both civil and criminal litigation.
I know, but Bob, I can't. I can only take so much. You know, I'm like you. One of these days, I'm just going to start punching. And, you know, it'll be in a VA hospital. Well, it won't be in a VA hospital unless I'm visiting somebody.
Well, is that a jerk? Well, this jerk threw the first punch.
Or it might be in the post office.
You know, he went to
Germany. Or it might be in Sears.
Yeah.
Or it might be in the traffic. All right, Bob, I got to go. Thanks, man. Thanks for checking in. Take care of yourself.
All right. Have a good weekend, Mike.
Okay, you too. I love Bob. When the lights go out, I want Bob close by with his whatever weapons he used in Vietnam. I want him close by. I want to be on his side of the barricade. Oh God. Whew. Where are we? Let's go to John, who's calling from Oakland, Ohio. John. All right, let's put John on hold and we'll come back to John. Well, actually, we don't have time to take another call right now. So what we'll do is just pick it up when we come back with your phone calls. And the number here, they're all full, but write it down, 800-989-1480. We'll see you on the other side of the news. Take care. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Yabba-da-da. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Novem Radio. Seven past the hour, the Malloy program on Nova M Radio Network. Let's go to Oakland, Ohio, where John is calling. Hey, John.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, that's Oakland, California.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oakland, California. All right, John.
So I'd like to talk. Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about two opposites.
Two what?
Opposites.
Opposites, all right.
Yeah, poetry and Rush Limbaugh and the Right Wing Noise Machine.
Sure.
Okay. First of all, when I hear you speak, I think of the lines from one of my favorite poets, Dylan Thomas. Do not go gently into that good night, but rage, rage against the dying of the light.
Now, why does this program make you think of that, John?
By dying of the light, I think it can refer to a country.
All right, I'll go for that. Sure.
Yeah, and I think anybody can rage, rage against the dying of the light. We all have means to do that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And on the subject of poetry.
Mm-hmm.
I have a formula for recognizing a poetic moment.
And that would
be... It works
be...
for me.
All right, how do you do it?
Well, everything seems to stop, and an exclamation mark appears in your mind, and you go, wow, or damn.
That's good. I like that.
Yeah, so I have some examples of it.
Sure.
So it can be during lovemaking.
Uh-huh.
It can be your cat staring at you.
Your what?
Your cat staring at you.
Staring at you, okay.
Yeah. It can be a bumblebee appearing on your windshield.
That's very true.
Yeah.
I got an email about that and a photograph. You didn't send that, did you?
No, no.
Oh, okay.
So it can be while you're in the yard getting bit by a spider.
No, that's not poetry. That's panic.
Okay. Or it can be while you're listening to Mike Malloy.
Well, that I don't know. Is that poetry or a sign of a nervous breakdown?
Well, it could either, I guess.
Yeah, right. And probably the latter.
Well, I do get some poetic moments during your show. A lot of it's prose. I've been into poetry all my life.
Uh-huh.
So I think I can
speak. Well, for some reason, and this is weird, since you brought it up, poetry, for some reason, for the past few weeks, maybe a couple of months, what has been floating in and out of my head, and I don't remember any of the stanzas, except at the very beginning, it was a wedding guest, and he stoppeth one of three. The opening lines, or the entire poem, The Rime of the Ancient Mariner. And for some reason, I read that along with my classmates when we were in high school. And
that's my dad's favorite, by the way.
Oh, my God. It was just a phenomenal poem, one of the scariest poems I think I have ever read, one of the scariest narratives I think of a poetry or prose, and for some reason it's been just popping into my head, not any particular part of it, but the overall. I remember the visuals I got when I first read that in class when I was 16 or 17 years old. The visuals I got have stuck with me all these years, of the albatross and water, water everywhere, and how the boards did shrink. Water, water everywhere, nor any drop to drink. You know, the slow dying of thirst and the curse from this albatross. And I don't know, maybe it's a reflection in my mind anyway of what's going on in this country politically. I don't know.
I think so, yeah. I have never read the poem myself.
Oh, it's great.
My dad keeps reciting lines to me from it, so he's memorized it.
It's amazing. It's amazing. All right, John, thanks for checking in. I appreciate it, okay?
Okay.
All right, you take care.
You too.
Did we used to do a poetry slam night in Chicago?
We did two of those with Mark Smith. So what? Back from the Green Mill in Chicago.
Right.
Belmont. I missed that. That was a lot of fun. And then, of course, when you would do Bughouse Square Fridays, then people could use their one interrupted minute to say a poem or let their parakeet talk on
that's
the air
right.
or
right.
whatever they wanted to do. We used to do that one or two Saturday. I wasn't involved in the program at that time on an intimate basis as I am today.
You just had to deal with the
But that was
nervous,
my idea.
You had to deal with the nervous breakdowns every night.
That's right. That's right. And that was Friday nights.
Is that when we did it?
Oh, that's when you would do Bughouse Square. When you would you ring
that's
the little
right.
bell. Remember, this was so low tech. You actually had a hotel bell, you know, right there on the console.
Yeah.
Ding, ding, ding,
ding, ding.
You know, when their minute was up, or You know, and we put a lot of faith in your board op at the time that he'd be able to dump anybody who came on. And
well, I had control of the dump button.
Too. Oh, that's right.
Both Joe and I had the
those
dump
were
button.
The days.
They were indeed. It was either my junior or senior high school English teacher, I'm not sure which, who told us when we read The Rime of the Ancient Mariner. She said, I want you to read this, or however she said it. And when you come to the most oft-quoted lines, water, water everywhere, and how the boards did shrink, she said, don't, no matter how many times you say this poem later on in your life, don't ever say, water, water everywhere, and not a drop to drink. That's not the line. The line is, water, water everywhere, nor any drop to drink. And the way she said it, it's Miss Fields, I think. The way she said it stuck. So to this day, it's kind of like, do not go gentle into that good night. Oh, Kathy's rolling her eyes. We ought to do poetry night again sometime.
I know my liner's wrong.
That's all right. That's all right. Back to your calls. Tim is calling from San Francisco. Tim, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing all right. How are you?
Buddy? Hey, really fine, man. It's been a while since I've been able to talk at you there, my brother. It's kind of difficult getting through sometimes, but hey, that's all right.
That's okay. That works.
Yeah. Hey, thank God you got the work, brother. Yeah, yeah. It's tough out there, man. Hey, I've been basking in true freedom here in San Francisco. I got my medical marijuana ID card this week.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's like heaven. Like, you don't have to go deal with these people on wherever and find this stuff. And you can sit in your home and you go, they can come into my house. There's nothing they can do. I'm not doing anything illegal, man.
Well, according to the Bush Justice Department, you can still be busted.
Oh, God.
I don't mean to screw up your trip right now.
Oh, man, no.
But are you a little high right now?
Me? Oh, good Lord.
No, the guy next to you. the one sitting on your shoulder.
Yeah, that's it. See, I'm the kind of person I'll smoke a little weed and then I'll drink coffee and I'll work on my computers all day. See, I've trained myself how to build computers over the past 10 years, and so I'm kind of an expert on them. So, yeah, when I do it, it's like I'm learning something all the time. You know.
Now you have to smoke marijuana because of a medical condition.
Yeah, for sure. Whatever. But
well, back in the day, so did I. It was called nervousness.
Oh, there you go. That's it. No. Yeah. Nah, I just, you know.
That's all right. You don't have to share it. That's okay.
Well,
that's
Churchill had his dog, black dog, so I do too. So.
Say what? Churchill had his black dog?
Right. You know what I mean. Depression.
Oh, yeah.
See, that's what Churchill called
it. Well, marijuana will make the depression even worse.
Well, no. See, I take, what it is I've got a very good psychiatrist. And she gives me, you know, depression medication, but it's like you have to be able to forget, too, what makes you depressed.
You've probably heard this. Reality is for people who can't tolerate drugs.
Oh, give me a break. You and I are the same generation, brother.
Yeah,
hey, I got two little bits for your tinfoil crowd over there.
Okay, go ahead.
These are real good research things, and you never know what's going to happen. Now, first one is go to Google Videos and key in Kennedy and then Secret Service.
Okay.
There's like a little 10-minute movie that will utterly blow your mind. It's actually of the Secret Service pulling away from Kennedy before he takes the corner to go down the hill.
So the shooters
are backing up away.
Yeah, so the shooters have a clear shot.
Right. But also, too, what they didn't do is the driver of the car himself actually stopped for a moment right for the kill shot, and then the kill shot happened, and they never, ever interviewed him.
I hate these people. I hate even the ones that are dead. Tim,
sure.
I got to leave you there, pal. Thanks. Stay in touch.
Okay, brother. Take care, man.
Don't be a stranger.
A thousand doctors can't be wrong, except of course in this one case. So all you good folks sing along. Let's put them potheads in their place. They say it helps them ease the pain and keep their breakfast down.
What, it's over? Well, that's rather abrupt. That's a good way to get whiplash. 22 past the hour. This just in, University of Florida President Bernie Machen said Friday he was tremendously disappointed with the school's faculty senate vote to deny former Governor Jeb Bush an honorary degree. The Senate voted 38-28 against giving the honorary degree to Bush, who left office in January. A University of Florida officials said they could not recall any precedent for the Senate rejecting the nominees put forth by the Faculty Senate Honorary Degrees, Distinguished Alumnus Awards, and Memorials Committee. The committee determines whether nominees deserve consideration in light of the standards for such degrees, which include, quote, eminent distinction in scholarship or high distinction in public service, end quote. President Machen said, quote, the committee endorsed him. It is unheard of that a faculty committee would look at candidates, make recommendations, and then those candidates be overturned by the Senate. An email sent to Bush by the Associated Press was not immediately returned. There you go. There you go. There you go. From Waiamea, Iran needs to get down to some serious torturing of the 15 U.S.-UK imperial terrorists, spies, and saboteurs immediately, since they are totally unrestricted in torture methods, as are the invading imperial enemies, Bush and Blair. The point here is, Iran has captured 15, or taken into custody 15 British soldiers, and Tony Blair supports, doesn't he, unrestricted torture to the same degree that Bush does. I mean, come on. So now what? Are these 15 sailors, British Marines, going to be waterboarded? Huh? I hate to think what happens, thanks to George W. Bush and torture boy Gonzalez and Rumsfeld and the rest of these monsters that have corrupted this country and everything they've touched for the past 6 years. What's going to happen when 5 or 6 or 7 United States soldiers or Marines are taken prisoner? What's going to happen to them? How will we find their bodies? Back to your phone calls. Siobhan is calling from New Jersey. Siobhan, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
I was on hold for so long. I was playing Diamond Mine.
Yeah, you've been on hold for about 3 nights, haven't you?
Well, no, anyway, I wanted to share with you, and maybe I'm not quite right, but I think I've got it.
Okay.
Basically, this plan that's going on right now has been, like, in the planning for, like, a very long time.
Which plan?
You know, to, like, go into, have this war going on and, you know.
Oh, the surge?
Invading Iraq, you know, all that crap. But anyway, what brought this up to my brain for new is that, you know, back in the 70s, our economy kind of crapped out because of the war in Vietnam and then continued into stagflation under Carter.
Mm-hmm.
And then subsequently after that, little by little, all of a sudden outsourcing became popular. You know,
right.
Get rid of industry here and put it someplace else. Because back then, the price of oil affected GDP. So if you could get rid of enough American industry, then the price of oil could rise where it would not affect GDP.
Okay.
In other words, basically the Democrats and the Republicans are selling us right down the crapper.
Well, okay, all based on oil?
Well, the price of oil, you know, like, because when it goes up, it comes out in the GDP. You get inflation, you get stagflation, you get whatever.
Yeah.
But if they could lighten the load of the craft, like if you have a plane that's running out of fuel, you start dumping stuff that makes it heavy. Right?
Right.
So, like, what we did was we just dumped jobs.
Why we need to invade Iraq.
All right. Well, I think I've got it, too, or at least a piece of it.
You know, I didn't know if anybody else has that idea, but that's what it came to me. And the reason it came to me was because I read this thing in the Brown Journal of World Affairs.
Yeah.
And this fellow, Vicario, was saying that one of the things that's new in the American economy is that the fact that the price of oil goes up doesn't affect GDP.
Well, I think I got it. Siobhan, I have to leave it there. Thank you. I'm going to think about that.
And control,
and control
of those barrels of black gold. Yeah, step up, folks, to another war when we never really say what we're fighting for. It's easy to pretend we're defending our native soil.
Now I ain't no fan of Saddam Hussein. Oh, please don't get me wrong. If it's free in the Iraqi people, after them, why have we waited so long? Why didn't we sort this out last time? Was he less evil then than he is now? The stock market holds the answer to why him, why here, why now? 'Cause it's all about the price of oil. It's all.
There you go, Siobhan. 25 before the hour. Jahu sends me a couple of lines. When you're wounded and left on Afghanistan's plains and the women come out to cut up your remains, just roll to your rifle and blow out your brains and go to your God like a soldier. Rudyard Kipling, who, of course, has been called the Bard of British Imperialism. Are you all familiar with that one, too? The Young British Soldier, I believe, is the title of that. I probably got that one wrong, too.
Well, was that a British accent?
No. Hell no. That was Serbian.
Ah, well, then it's okay.
We are drifting dangerously close to poetry. The guy who trained me in talk radio 25 years ago said, Malloy, don't ever do poetry, and remember, there's always a gay man out there who wants to have your baby.
Yeah, but of course, he couldn't spell, so there was probably a reason he warned you against it. I saw some of those memos from him. Lovable guy, but...
My first boss. Yeah, he was. He really was. He taught me how to do talk radio. He didn't pay me anything. Zero. But...
It's priceless.
When you're wounded and left on Afghanistan's plains and the women come out to cut up what remains, just roll to your rifle and blow out your brains and go to your God like a soldier. Now, that was 160, 170 years ago. That's how long that Westerners have tried to defeat Afghanistan. After the British, of course, came the Russians, then came the Americans. And I'm sure somewhere in there were other invaders. It's insane. You know, who was it? Was it MacArthur? Was it General MacArthur who said that the United States, way back in the 50s, when he wanted to nuke North Korea, he wanted to nuke China, he said that the United States should never get involved in a land war in Asia. And that was in 50-51. Prior to the war in Indochina. And MacArthur, you know, he was fired for insubordination. Truman fired him. But the point was made. There are certain types of warfare that Westerners, or anyone for that matter, simply cannot win in the sense of defeating someone and installing someone in place in the government or what have you to be sympathetic to the conqueror. There is urban warfare, obviously, is one. The French learned that the hard way in Algeria back in the 50s, and we have paid no attention to that whatsoever. The French also learned in Vietnam. So what do? We imitate the French. Nothing against the French, but... guerrilla warfare simply cannot be defeated. Colombia. Take a look at Colombia. How long has the insurgency been going on in Colombia? Are we in the 30th year, the 40th year?
It cannot be defeated. It cannot be. And for the armchair generals and the fake soldier, well, by God, if I had a gun, I'd go over and show them. No, you wouldn't. No, you wouldn't. You wouldn't show anybody anything. For those people, shouldn't it be almost required reading to read some of the historic generals who, going back 5,000 years, who have very carefully laid out the sorts of wars not to get involved in? And is it not true here in the 21st century that the sort of war not to get involved in is any war? I mean, that's not hard stuff, right? No, it's not. Bill is calling from Phoenix. Hi, Bill. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing fine.
When you answered the guy's question about when we had pride in our leaders, I thought about the first rockets leaving the planet with brave men aboard them. And I thought, wow, I'm going to grow up in a nation that's headed real fast toward its promise and dream. You know, but that's not why I called. I called about Tony Snow. That thing that they're taking out of him?
Yeah.
Actually, it's his conscience. It's turned to stone. And it couldn't get out of his mouth, so it wanted to take a more appropriate exit, you know. And it's just more denial from him. He's denying it a more apropos exit.
Ouch. You think it's his conscience, huh?
It has to be.
Yeah.
Turned to rock.
Yeah.
Wouldn't yours if you had to lie that much.
Well, I was thinking today when Kathy told me the news that Tony Snow was going to have this operation. Now, according to what I've read in the news...
Son of a bitch is dead inside already, Mike. I don't feel no pain.
Well,
not for him. He's dead inside, and the rest of them, they're all dead freaking inside rotten.
Yeah, I understand.
And they're starting to smell.
I do understand what you're saying, but I understand also from what I've read today in the news about Snow's condition, it is not cancerous. It's something else. Who knows?
His conscience. It turned to a rock. Yeah. It was useless. He couldn't do anything else. He figured he'd go out with the rest of the garbage. He's just denying an appropriate exit. That's it.
Yeah.
We live in and I agree, though. When they shot Kennedy, we became a country subverted, and the subversion continues today.
I guess so.
Make it stop, will you, please?
I'll do it. Thanks, Bill. I appreciate you checking in. All right, take care.
The one thing I'm sort of looking forward to while Tony Snow is recuperating is the fact that Dana Perino is going to be handling all of his press conferences, so she's going to be, like, sitting in every day, and it's going to be just, like, so much wild, mad fun to just, like, talk about Dana Perino all the time, you know, like what I'm talking about, you know, like, gag me with a microphone.
Yeah, she does talk that way, doesn't she?
She ends every sentence up like that. Like, yeah, like, why are you asking me these questions? I don't know. Go ask, I don't know, like, Department of Energy or something. What do I look like? Your hairdresser?
Edie writes in, Alexander the Great spilled his share of blood in Afghanistan. Oh, my God. She writes, I thought the military academies studied these ancient butchers. Well... Nobody has ever been successful, though, in an invasion in Afghanistan. I don't know, but we're there. Jim is calling from Lombard, Illinois. Jim, welcome to the program. Hey, Jim.
Yeah.
Hi, yeah, welcome to the program.
Hello, I'm here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that this poem, The Rime of the Ancient Mariner, real sailors back in those days thought that poem was a joke because they would kill albatrosses like out of style, and they would just keep killing albatrosses, and they would make pipes out of their bones, and they would eat the meat, and they thought the poem was a joke. And another thing is that he forgot what when he was talking about Rudyard Kipling, he should remember the poem Gunga Din by Rudyard Kipling.
That's a good one too.
Yeah, and is this Mike Malloy?
Yeah.
I didn't even know. I thought I was talking to the call screener.
Is this Zell Miller?
No, this is my name is Jim.
Oh. Oh, hey, Jim.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
Well, I'm just sitting here drinking a few beers, and I heard you talking about some poems that I used to like a lot. But the thing is that I learned a little bit about world history and what people really thought about these poems back in the days that they were written. And
Well, don't forget, as far as Samuel Taylor Coleridge, the author of Rime of the Ancient Mariner, he was a drug addict. He was hooked on not laudanum, but what was the big drug back then, Kathy? Opium.
How old do I look?
I'm sorry.
Well, he was back around the early 1800s, so I don't know what, probably opium. Because that's when the opium wars were going on, wasn't it?
Somewhere back there. I think you're right. All right, let me move on. Thanks, Jim. Take care. I spent a month one night in Lombard, by the way. Great place. Lombard, Illinois. I love it. Though I've belted you and flayed you by the living God that made you, you're a better man than I am, Gunga Din. I like that poem, too. That was, I think, one of the few poems I think Kipling wrote where he acknowledged British imperialism in that way, where the humility of the British soldier, or the consciousness of the British soldier, took second position to the consciousness of the water boy. But of course, that was when Gunga Din died, so I guess it didn't count.
Slap you on the back and say,
friends in Canada.
I was born like this. I had no choice. I was born with the gift of a golden voice and 27 angels from the great beyond. They tied me to this table right here in the Tower of Song. So you can stick your little pins in that voodoo doll.
Leonard Cohen, one of our favorite Canadians. Bruce in New Jersey. Hey, Mike. Absinthe Wormwood was a big favorite back then. Absinthe that Coleridge was probably addicted to, among other things, yeah. Everybody has to be addicted to something, right? Huh? You know you do. We all do. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program tonight and helped produce it and bring it to you. Also answered your telephone calls. Our senior correspondent is Chris in Minnesota. Someday I'll tell you Chris's last name. Mark Marshall is our moderator. Is our webmaster. Our militant moderators work 24/7 at MikeMalloy.com on the message board, so check it out. And go to NovaMRadio.com, please, and sign up for downloads and podcasts and a chance to win $10,000. Back to your phone calls. Clark is calling from Phoenix. Hey, Clark.
Hey.
Welcome to the program, Clark.
Thanks. Almost forgot what I called. No, Smedley Butler. Have you ever heard of Smedley Butler?
Oh, yeah. Read a lot of his stuff.
War is a Racket.
War is a Racket. Have quoted him on the air many times.
Well, I've got a theory. It's kind of a half-baked theory. I was thinking that the Book of Revelations was added to the Bible by weapons dealers.
Or people who are into desert drugs like peyote.
No, it was very, that would be, fantastic. This is a very practical thing. You know, if you put a book in the Bible that basically is a prescription for endless war, and you sell weapons to anybody that wants to fight it.
Revelation being a prescription for endless war? Really? Is that how you read it?
The Book of Revelations?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there's always a beast, you know, there's always somebody to fight against, you know.
Yeah, but I first read that when I was about 9. My grandmother had this wonderful idea, let me read it. Good God in heaven, so to speak. But ever since that time, when I got older, it was just very clear to me. This is somebody who was really, really stoned who wrote that. The imagery in there is strictly, world-class acid or peyote or psilocybin or something, whatever grows in the deserts in the Middle East. This guy, whoever wrote Revelation, John, who wrote Revelation, got a hold of some of it and ate it and just tripped his brains out and decided, man, I got to get this written down.
Well, that's a possibility, I suppose.
Well, I believe that. No, I really do. I really do believe that.
Well, definitely, they didn't know much about the guy that wrote it. He was kind of off by himself. He was reclusive, I believe, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Supposedly. And, of course, you know, I mean,
and used
in my
to go out,
opinion,
used
the,
to...
whole, the whole litany of the Bible and all the rest of it is pretty much, I don't put much faith in any of it, but so, anybody could have written anything. Anybody could have written something that somebody thought they said or what they, thought somebody else said they said. So it's all, and apparently there's so many different kind of interpretations of everything. It's all pointless. It's like the words we use nowadays, like left wing and right wing and conservative and liberal. They're so full of meaning that they don't mean anything anymore.
That sounds zen. They're so full of meaning they don't mean anything. I like that. That's good. All right, Clark, let me move on.
Well,
thanks.
One more thing I want to ask you. Did you get a chance to listen to that song, Terry Reid? Terry Reid, The Dreams. It's on a book, an album called The River. So if you
Not yet. We are going to.
All right.
Thanks, Clark. I appreciate you checking in. No, I don't mean any disrespect to people who want to believe that everything in the Bible is divinely inspired. If that's the case, then there are an awful lot of Christians out there who are violating God's word, because where it says a couple of places in the Old Testament makes reference to, it never says it clearly and unequivocally, but where it makes reference to gay folk. At least according to, the interpreters now, the gatekeepers of Christianity, these right-wing freaks, that gay folk are just, out there in the ozone somewhere and God's curse. These are the same people who do not go murder their daughters when they disobey. And yet the same book that talks about gay folk will talk about, kill your children when they disrespect you. Take them out in the backyard and beat them to death with goat horns or something. But however you do it, just murder them because they're being disrespectful.
Well, then I guess Dr. James Dobson is probably the best Christian in the world.
Well, he just may be. The only reason I jump down on Christianity is because it seems so hypocritical. It just really does. I'm not talking about, if somebody wants to follow that philosophy, go ahead. But do you have to be such a hypocrite about it, you can't, I'm not going to kill my daughter, but gay people are weird. Oh, now that makes sense. That really makes sense. If you're getting your instructions from the same book. Oh, don't tell me I'm going to wind up the program on that note. I guess so. Let me see. We got 20 seconds left.
Don't miss the talk shows on Sunday.
Yeah.
There's going to be a huge change in lineup.
Well, we think. On the other hand, I got an email tonight that said the nattering nabobs of negativity on the Sunday chat shows are going to ignore this Gonzalez story altogether. I don't think Bob Schieffer will. A lot of people think Schieffer is a right winger. No, I don't think so. I think Schieffer has just had his belly full like most of us had.
No, I don't think Tim Russert will. He's had a taste of the special prosecutor's grand jury room. I don't think he'll ignore it.
He's media whore number one. Have a great weekend, folks. Thanks for participating. I'll see you Monday. Take care, okay? Keep it lit. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio Network. Oh, yeah. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.
I'm going.